Hello, and welcome to our writing seminar entitled The Science of Scientific and Technical Writing, How to Achieve Greater Control of Reader Interpretations. My name is Lindsay Gensel Wang. I am one of the managing editors at LetPub, the flagship editing brand of Acton, based in Boston, Massachusetts. We also have an office conveniently located in Shanghai, China. I am very excited to present this highly impactful topic to you all today. The information I will share with you in this presentation goes far beyond typical cosmetic grammatical edits. I will review cutting-edge research from the fields of rhetoric, cognitive psychology, and linguistics to help you learn precisely how to produce writing that readers correctly interpret. In terms of the agenda, I will first be discussing how to write with the reader in mind. I will then transition to discussing what the reader's expectations are for the structure of scientific writing. I will be explaining key linguistic concepts such as subject-verb separation, the topic position, and the stress position to show how authors can achieve greater control of a reader's interpretive process. I'll then proceed to cover how to avoid the number one problem in scientific writing, how to perceive logical gaps in your content, locating the action, and finally, writing and the scientific process. All right, so let's proceed to the first part of this presentation entitled Write with the Reader in Mind. To many people, scientific writing is often very hard to read. Scientists often assume that because of the technical language and complex scientific concepts being discussed, scientific writing must therefore always be dense, complicated, and not easily understood. This is absolutely not true. If we learn how readers read, meaning how they process written communication, we can therefore present more clear text based on reader expectations. It's very important to know that readers do not simply read, they interpret. In order for a paper to be successfully understood, readers must accurately perceive what the author had in mind. If readers do not perceive accurately what the author had in mind, the importance of the hypothesis will be misunderstood. So, to figure out how to create writing that is clear and logical, we first need to know how readers go about reading. Today, I will discuss some principles that will help you produce more clear writing that does not oversimplify scientific concepts. It is important to remember that with any piece of text, 10 or more people may interpret that text in 10 or more different ways. Readers make interpretive decisions based on clues they receive from the structure of a text. What do I mean by this? Let's take a look at an example. Let us say that in tracking the temperature of a liquid over a period of time, a scientist takes measurements every 3 minutes and records a list of temperatures. These data could be presented by a number of written structures, meaning they can be presented in a number of different ways. Here are two possibilities shown on the slide. In the first one up at the top, we have the data for time, lowercase t, and the data for temperature, uppercase T, written from left to right, scrolling across the screen as they would in a typical sentence. Below, we have the data for time and temperature listed conveniently in a table format. Precisely the same information appears in both formats, yet most readers find the second one easier to interpret in terms of the It may be that the very familiarity of the table structure makes it easier to see and review the data. This is pretty obvious. But more significantly, the structure of the second table provides the reader with an easily perceived context, time, in which the significant piece of information, temperature, can therefore be interpreted in terms of an overall hypothesis. The second example at the bottom of the slide is therefore a better choice because the reader will then interpret the meaning of the text or data in a way that the author probably intended. This is an example that shows how important the structure is to writing. Information is interpreted more easily and more uniformly if it is placed where most readers expect to find it within a sentence. These needs and expectations of readers affect the interpretation, not only of tables, as I showed you in the last example, but also of text itself. Readers have relatively fixed expectations about where in the structure of a sentence they will encounter particular items of substance. If writers can become aware of these ideal locations within a sentence, they can therefore have better control of the degrees of recognition and emphasis a reader will give to various pieces of information. Good writers are intuitively aware of these expectations. That is why their text is more clear, impactful, and persuasive. This idea of examining reader expectations hinges on what are known as units of discourse. A unit of discourse is defined as anything with a beginning and an end in terms of text. For example, a clause, a phrase, a sentence, or a section of a scientific paper. A research article, as you know, is divided into recognizable sections that are labeled the introduction, the methods, the results, and the discussion. When the sections or units of discourse, for example, are confused, readers are often equally confused. I'll give you an example. When too much experimental detail is found in the results section, or when the discussion and results sections are confused, or the data is misplaced, readers are confused as to how to interpret correctly the hypothesis of that paper. The same notion applies to individual words in a sentence, meaning all of those words need to be in the correct places for the reader to correctly interpret that sentence. Readers search for information in certain places, as I've mentioned before. If these structural expectations, as we can call them, are violated, readers are then forced to divert energy to unraveling the structure of your text, which is not necessarily a good thing. As the complexity of the content increases, so does the possibility that your reader will misinterpret your text. Therefore, as the complexity of your content increases, you need to become more aware of the structure of your writing. So how do we go about addressing some of these issues? I will now proceed to show you how to clarify and improve the structure of your writing based on reader expectations. Here is our first example of scientific writing in its original form. I'll go ahead and read this passage of text for you now. The smallest of the URFs, URF 6L, a 207 nucleotide reading frame overlapping out of phase the NH2 terminal portion of the adenosine triphosphatase subunit 6 gene has been identified as the animal equivalent of the recently discovered yeast hydrogen ATPase subunit 8 gene. The functional significance of the other URFs has been, on the contrary, elusive. Recently, however, immunoprecipitation experiments with antibodies to purified rotetinone-sensitive NADH ubiquinone oxidoreductase from bovine heart, as well as enzyme fractionation studies, have indicated that six human URFs, URF1, 2, 3, and 4, hereafter referred to as ND1, ND2, ND3, and ND4, encode subunits of complex 1. This is a large complex that also contains many subunits synthesized in the cytoplasm. So why is this paragraph so hard to read? Is it the technical vocabulary? Or maybe it requires specialized background knowledge? Many people would assume one of those two reasons is the reason why this text was so hard to read. However, knowing a little about the subject matter does not clear up the confusion. The reader is hindered by more than just the scientific jargon, meaning the scientific technical terms. I will now show how you can fix some of these problems with this text by employing linguistics research. The first rhetorical principle I will discuss is called subject-verb separation. Let's look again at the first sentence of the passage that I read above. The first thing that we can notice is that it's a long sentence. It has about 42 words. But that's actually not the main problem. The main problem is actually a structural defect, meaning the words or the keywords are essentially placed in incorrect positions within the sentence. The fact that we have a long sentence and that words are misplaced places a large burden on the reader. Also, we should note that the grammatical subject, which is the smallest of the URFs, I've gone ahead and highlighted it in orange on your slide, is separated from the verb by 23 words. The verb being shown in green, and it is, has been identified. We can see that more than half the sentence is placed in between the grammatical subject of the sentence and the verb, which is shown in green. This is not good. Let's talk about why. Readers expect a grammatical subject to be followed immediately by the verb. Anything of length that intervenes between the subject and the verb is read as an interruption, and therefore as something of lesser importance. The reader's expectation stems from a pressing need for what linguists call syntactic resolution. And by syntactic resolution, I mean the end of a group of words or phrases. Readers typically expect that at the end of the syntactic resolution, or at the end of a group of words or phrases, we have the arrival of the verb. Therefore, you should always make sure that your subject is followed as closely as possible by the verb, meaning move the subject and verb as close together as you possibly can. Each unit of discourse is expected to serve a single function, to make a single point, meaning each sentence typically makes a single point. Making multiple points within one sentence can cause confusion. This leads us to the next principle to discuss to improve the clarity of your writing. It is called the stress position. It is linguistic commonplace that readers naturally emphasize the material that arrives at the end of a sentence. We refer to this location as the stress position. If a writer is aware of this tendency that we have as readers, he or she can therefore arrange for material they want to emphasize to appear at the moment the reader is naturally exerting the greatest reading emphasis, which is, as I mentioned, typically at the end of a sentence. As a result, the chances greatly increase that reader and writer will perceive the same material as being worthy of primary emphasis. The very structure of the sentence thus helps persuade the reader of the relative values of the sentence's contents. A fun and easy way to remember this concept is to think about when we're eating dinner. When we're eating dinner, we often start by eating vegetables. Then we proceed to the highlight of the meal, which is typically, for most people, dessert. Keep in mind that long sentences increase the chances the reader won't interpret the text as the writer intended, unless they are written and punctuated very carefully and correctly. The stress position should coincide, and by stress position, again, we mean the end of a sentence, should coincide with the moment of syntactic closure, meaning the end of a thought, of a group of words or phrases that compose that thought. Readers delight in being rewarded at the end of a sentence with an important piece of information, just as we like to be rewarded at the end of dinner by eating dessert. Denying readers of this causes confusion and a lack of clarity in your writing. Within a sentence, secondary stress positions can be formed by the appearance of a properly used colon or semicolon. Thus, sentences can be effortlessly extended to dozens of words as long as there is syntactic closure for every piece of new, stress-worthy information along the way. So let's review. We have now discussed three rhetorical principles based on reader expectations that you can employ in your writing. The first one, as we discussed, is to check to see if the grammatical subject of the sentence is followed as closely as possible by the verb. The second is that every unit of discourse, no matter how small the size, should serve a single function or make a single point. Third, information intended to be emphasized should appear at points of syntactic closure, meaning at the end, typically, of a sentence. Using these principles, we can begin to spot some problems in our example text. Note the subject-verb separation in this 62-word third sentence of the original passage. I'll go ahead and read it again here. Keep an eye out for the subject and the verb. Recently, however, immunoprecipitation experiments with antibodies to purified rotenone-sensitive NADH ubiquinone oxidoreductase, hereafter referred to as respiratory chain NADH, dehydrogenase or complex 1 from bovine heart, as well as enzyme fractionation studies, have indicated that 6 human URFs encode subunits of complex 1. Again, what's wrong here? If we notice, the subject and the verb are very far apart. So what's wrong here? Again, we notice the subject and the verb are separated, and the reader is burdened by reading all of the intervening words, which causes a lot of difficulty. If we applied the principles we have learned, we could generate several revised versions of this paragraph that would be much more impactful and probably lead to the reader more correctly interpreting the text. Again, please note, the length of a sentence wasn't necessarily the problem. Readers can use long sentences. It's how the sentence is structured and where the important words are placed. As I mentioned before, you can write long sentences. However, making sure to use semicolons or periods correctly can really help to emphasize certain pieces of information. A lot of people ask, but when exactly is a sentence too long? A sentence is too long when it has more viable candidates for stress positions, meaning more pieces of important information than there are stress positions available. What does this mean? This means a sentence is too long when you have too many important ideas all jammed together within one sentence. To create a clear and impactful sentence, we would first put subjects and verbs close together to lessen the reader's burden, and we would put the material we believed worthy of emphasis at the end, in the stress positions. Please remember, no one should have to work really hard. The importance of your sentence. The job of the author is to make the process of interpretation and reading for the reader as easy as possible. This leads me to our next principle called the topic position. Just to review, in the stress position, the reader needs and expects closure and fulfillment. In the topic position, meaning the beginning of a sentence, the reader needs and expects some perspective and some context about what is going to be discussed. The information that begins a sentence is crucial to establishing for the reader a perspective for viewing the sentence as a unit. The topic position refers to the beginning of a sentence, as I mentioned. Readers expect a unit of discourse to be a story about whatever information shows up first. Let's take a look at two simple examples. The first one is bees disperse pollen. The second is pollen is dispersed by bees. Both of these sentences are different, but they're both equally respectable and they share basically the same facts. However, the first one tells us something about bees, the second tells us something about pollen. The passivity of the second sentence does not by itself impair its quality. In fact, pollen is dispersed by bees is actually the superior sentence because if it were to be placed in a paragraph that intends to tell us about pollen, a reader would expect to be introduced to pollen at the beginning of a sentence. Therefore, the second example, pollen is dispersed by bees, is actually the more ideal choice, again, if you're writing a paragraph about pollen. it is important to remember that the topic position, again, meaning the beginning of a sentence, provides a linkage to the important information that will be stressed at the end of a sentence. So obviously, pollen, in this example, needs to relate to bees in some sense, in terms of the content that will be discussed. Let's look at another example. I'll go ahead and read the sample text for you now. Large earthquakes along a given fault segment do not occur at random intervals because it takes time to accumulate the strain energy for the rupture. The rates at which tectonic plates move and accumulate strain at their boundaries are approximately uniform. Therefore, in first approximation, one may expect that large ruptures of the same fault segment will occur at approximately constant time intervals. If subsequent main shocks have different amounts of slip across the fault, then the recurrence time may vary, and the basic idea of periodic main shocks must be modified. For great plate boundary ruptures, the length and slip often vary by a factor of 2. Along the southern segment of the San Andreas Fault, the recurrence interval is 145 years, with variations of several decades. The smaller the standard deviation of the average recurrence interval, the more specific could be the long-term prediction of a future main shock. This is the type of text that is very hard to follow and very hard to decipher. In order to locate the problems in this sample text, let's first take a look at the information in each of the sentence's topic positions, meaning at the beginning of each of the sentences. I've gone ahead and made a list, shown here on this slide, of the information that is included in the topic positions of the sentences in this paragraph. I'll go ahead and read them. We have large earthquakes, the rates, therefore, subsequent main shocks, great plate boundary ruptures, the southern segment of the San Andreas Fault, and the smaller the standard deviation. The reason this paragraph is confusing and kind of hard to follow is because most of the information I listed here is making its first and only appearance in this paragraph. And it's in actually the precise spot where readers are looking for older, more familiar information. Meaning, we have too many pieces of new information in the topic positions. As a result, the focus of the story in this particular paragraph is constantly shifting. Given just the material in the topic positions, no two readers would be likely to construct exactly the same story for the paragraph as a whole. We could revise our example text by ensuring the following. Backward linking old information appears in the topic position, and the new, more emphasis-worthy information could then appear in the stress position at the end of a sentence. I've included an example of a revised version of this text on the next slide. Here is our revised version. I'll go ahead and read it for you now. See if you notice any differences. Large earthquakes along a given fault segment do not occur at random intervals because it takes time to accumulate the strain energy for the rupture. The rates at which tectonic plates move and accumulate strain at their boundaries are roughly uniform. Therefore, nearly constant time intervals would be expected between large ruptures of the same fault segment. However, the recurrence time may vary. The basic idea of periodic main shocks may need to be modified if subsequent main shocks have different amounts of slip across the fault. Indeed, the length and slip of great plate boundary ruptures often vary by a factor of 2. For example, the recurrence intervals along the southern segment of the San Andreas Fault is 145 years with variations of several decades. The smaller the standard deviation of the average recurrence interval, the more specific could be the long-term prediction of a future main shock. Our revised version is much easier to read. We can see that most of our difficulty was not due to the fact that we were poor readers or had a lack of knowledge of the subject area. It was more so due to the author's lack of comprehension of our structural needs as readers, meaning the original author of that text didn't necessarily carefully think of where to place certain pieces of information so that that information would be easier for the reader to learn about. So why do we often encounter such poorly written text? The main reason is that many authors rush to write down their ideas. When an author is excited to record new data or information, he or she often jots it down right away, meaning that information ends up at the beginning of a sentence and is not at the end of a sentence. Therefore, the structure of rushed writing typically can be a bit sloppy. Good writers know that they need to revise their work once, twice, or three times to really consider how a reader goes about processing that information. The number one problem in professional writing today is actually this misplacement of old and new information. Let's take a second to review. In the topic position, make sure to always place old information that provides the context or kind of links backward to your original paper topic. In the stress position, place the new information that you really want the reader to know about and to emphasize. All right, so let's talk about revising the content of your text a bit more in depth. Let's talk about how to perceive logical gaps in your writing. When old information does not appear at all in a sentence, whether in the topic position or elsewhere, which can happen, readers are often left alone to construct the logical linkage by themselves, which is very bad and often leads to misinterpretation. Let's look at another example text. I'll go ahead and read it for you now. The enthalpy of hydrogen bond formation between the nucleoside bases 2-deoxyguanosine and 2-deoxycytosine has been determined by direct measurement. DG and DC were derivatized at the 5 and 3 hydroxyls with trisulfosyl groups to obtain solubility of the nucleosides in non-aqueous solvents and to prevent the ribose hydroxyls from forming hydrogen bonds. From isoparabolic titration measurements, the enthalpy of DC to DG base pair formation is -6.65 plus or minus 0.32 kilocalories per mole. All right, so much of this passage is again a bit difficult to read. We may think it's due to all of the specialized technical chemistry terms. However, again, a great deal of the difficulty resides in the structural problems. in the first sentence, the subject and verb are widely separated. The second sentence has only one stress position, but two or three pieces of information that are probably worthy of emphasis, meaning there's kind of too much information going on in the second sentence. Each sentence does not necessarily proceed logically from one to the other, which is an absolute must in good writing. All right, so let's talk about how to locate the action, meaning how to go about making revision in a text. It's helpful to talk about where we can go about getting started, because often authors will ask, where do I start? What do I focus on? First, keep in mind, attending to any one structural problem will eventually lead us to some of the other ones. So it's always good to go ahead and get started. You can first take a look at the topic sentences and think to yourself, do they provide context or background information? Then you can go ahead and make a list, or you could also underline the verbs in the paragraph, and then go ahead and check to see if the subjects and the verbs are separated. Remember, the fewer the structural clues to interpretation given by the author, the more variable the resulting interpretations will tend to be. As critical scientific readers, we need to focus all of our energy on whether the experiments prove the hypothesis. You do not want readers getting lost along the way in text that is poorly organized and has structural problems. At the beginning of this presentation, I mentioned that it is possible to revise scientific text without oversimplifying complex scientific concepts. I hope that by showing you some examples of very wordy, lengthy, and unclear text, and then showing you how to spot some of the structural problems, you are now able to see how you can go ahead and make some of the revisions. Here are some important tips to remember. Again, check your subjects and check your verbs. Make sure there aren't too many extraneous or superfluous words in between the subject and the verb. Again, place the important information about your data or your results in the stress position, meaning toward the end of a sentence, because, like dessert, readers expect to find it toward the end. Place old information in the topic position toward the beginning to provide some context. And lastly, again, provide context for your reader before asking that reader to consider anything that's new. So, just a few points to wrap up. You don't have to worry about following every single rule every single time. Rules can occasionally be broken. Some sophisticated writers like to provide some variety in their writing, so sometimes they'll go ahead and break the rules a bit. However, I would note that for most people, it's better to follow the basic principles until you feel comfortable making certain stylistic changes to your paper, because, again, you do not want to confuse or obscure, you don't want to confuse readers or obscure the important points of your manuscript. Remember, the substance of science comprises more than just the discovery and then the recording. The scientific process also extends crucially to the act of interpretation. because you can gather some tremendous data. However, when you're recording it in your manuscript, if readers do not make the same interpretation that you did, then they'll be confused by your manuscript. Always remember, the structure of a sentence actually influences the reader. It's always good to think to yourself, does my writing help or does it hinder the reader? Try to put yourself in the reader's shoes when you're revising your manuscript. I'm now going to provide a little more information about what we do and who we are. As I mentioned before, LetPub is the flagship editing brand of Acton. All of our editors are expert language editors who all have sophisticated knowledge of editing scientific manuscripts. We work with authors around the world, have two offices, again, Boston, Massachusetts, and Shanghai, China, and we focus on language editing, scientific editing, translation, and formatting work. More details about what we do can be found at letpub.com. You can also request a supplementary copy of this presentation that includes more examples of some of the principles that I talked about today. In the supplementary presentation, I've also included more examples of correct versions of the text I talked about today. We'd be happy to provide those documents for you. You can go ahead and email us at support@letpub.com. I hope you find some of the principles that I discussed today beneficial when you're revising and considering your manuscripts. Thank you so much for joining us.